Well, good morning. My name is Thomas Provencelik. I'm an American living in Hong Kong and Berlin. The title of my talk is a question: A Return of Cosmology to Newtonian Mechanics. The question. Dilemma? I start off with a dilemma. In the 1930s, the orbital velocities of stars in our galaxy and the speed of galaxies in the Kalmar cluster were found far greater than expected by Newtonian mechanics. This implied dark matter must exist to hold the galaxies together. In the 1960s, gravitational lensing in the Bullock cluster also showed the existence of dark matter, and perhaps suggested it. To date, particle experiments have not verified the hypothesis that dark matter does indeed exist. So there is no experimental evidence to confirm these early observations. What this means is cosmology faces a dilemma. Background. In this dilemma, Mond is proposed as an alternative if the dark matter hypothesis is not experimentally verified. It's the ace in the hole, so to speak. Now, of course, Mond here stands for modified Newtonian dynamics. Mond is based on the argument the laws of gravity need to be modified in the very weak field regime to explain the high velocities. And the purpose of the instant conference is to choose between the research programs of dark matter on one side and modified gravity on the other, so to speak, and also in choosing between different models within each program. You all know this. The purpose of my talk is to argue that the dark matter research program includes Newtonian mechanics as the limit of Einstein's general relativity at small velocities, and to argue that dark matter is the consequence of high velocities from overstated redshift and cosmic dust. But, there's always a but, if the redshifts are corrected for cosmic dust, astronomical velocities and masses are reasonably given by Newtonian dynamics, i.e. a return to Newtonian dynamics is in order. History. Hubble discovered the universe was expanding based on velocity measurements inferred from Doppler redshifts of light from recessing galaxies. But on the way to the Earth, the galaxy light is absorbed in nanoparticles of cosmic dust. NPs here are nanoparticles. Astronomers assume the light-dust interaction followed classical physics. What this means is the galaxy photon would cause a temperature change and there would be no redshift. But if quantum mechanics, the QM here is quantum mechanics, is assumed, temperature changes do not occur and the absorbed galaxy photon is conserved by re-emitting another photon, but a redshifted galaxy photon. So in this way, you avoid the temperature change. But the real reasoning is that classical physics was not correct. Quantum mechanics versus classical physics. Again, bringing up a comparison. Classical physics allows atoms and quantum-sized dust nanoparticles to fluctuate in temperature. But quantum mechanics forbids this. Because the atomic heat capacity vanishes, which requires the conservation of the galaxy photons by a non-thermal mechanism. For example, the one I've just mentioned, Cosmic dust conserves those galaxy photons by redshifted optical re-emission. Photons re-emitted without a temperature change. The effect of quantum mechanics. Now here is a plot of the atomic heat capacity of an atom, any atom. This goes back to Planck over 100 years ago. On the ordinary here, you see the Planck energy of the atom in electron volts. And on the abscissa, the electromagnetic confinement of that atom in microns, both of which follow the Planck law. This is the Planck law. This is at 300 Kelvin in yellow and 2.7 Kelvin in blue. And you can see that the KT energy of the atom is finite, KT, all the way down here at 300 Kelvin at least, down to around 100 microns. But below 100 microns, what happens, you can see the curve drops very quickly. This scale here is logarithmic, so the descent is very rapid. And you can see nanoparticles are way over here. So the classical physics is also shown, and it's shown here in dotted lines, and it allows the dust atoms for any confinement to always have KT heat capacity. So no matter where you are along here, even here along, classical physics will allow the atom to have thermal heat capacity. Quantum mechanics differs. It only allows KT heat capacity at the macro scale of that temperature. And you have to ask the question, how does the dust provide confinement less than 0.1 micron? You have to go to larger wavelengths to get down to 0.1. How does that happen? Well, to answer that question, we talk about electromagnetic confinement. In cosmic dust, this is a natural consequence of the high surface to volume ratio at the nanoscale. And upon absorption of galaxy light, almost all of the photon energy is deposited in the dust surface. And the electromagnetic confinement occurs as quantum mechanics precludes a temperature change, which would relieve the surface heat by thermal expansion. But it stops that. So what this means is that if the nanoparticle could expand a little to relieve that surface heat, you'd be back to the classical state with finite heat capacity. But that isn't the case. Quantum mechanics goes against that. Now what about reddening versus redshift? Many of the experiments in astronomy are based on reddening, but reddening and redshift are two different physical phenomena. Dust reddening is a color change in the light without a change in wavelength. This is normally seen in the sunset on Earth. Dust redshift changes wavelength. And that's what we'll be talking about today. Here you can see the incremental change. This Z is the redshift, which is measured. Delta lambda over lambda is the change in wavelength over the initial wavelength. And here you can see the definition. The total Z measurement is the sum of the recession velocity that Hubble was considering back in 1926, plus an additional term due to the dust, Z sub D. Of course, Hubble never worried about the dust. Now, the Doppler shift, this is really a galaxy velocity measurement. This is the velocity of recession of a galaxy. This is the speed of light. So this is the ratio of the speed of the galaxy to that of light. Here's the redshift measurement. And if you take the measurement much less than 1, you can show that The velocity of recession is simply the velocity of light c times the redshift, c major. Now, to give you a feel for these numbers, I go back to 1970. M31 was a spiral galaxy, and it was tested, was measured with the redshift, was measured with the nitrogen 2 line, and this line exists at 6583 angstroms. And to put in some numbers, again, to give you a feel, delta lambda, was 201. And that required resolving the spectra to 6.5 angstroms out of 6583. And the velocity was on the order of 300 kilometers per second. This was back in the 1970s. Now, simple QED, what is this? Well, you have to put this all together into a package of consistency. And what I've done here, I took the simple QED. When you think of QED, you normally think of Feynman and complex relativistic theory based on virtual photons advancement. But simple QED has nothing to do with that. We're going to be talking about a real photon conserving the heat from absorbed galaxy photon. A real photon. And simple QED, again, to emphasize the point, the photons are real, they are not virtual. You can test these. But briefly stated, under the restriction that the heat capacity of the atom vanishes, the heat of the galaxy photon, which is being absorbed, creates standing electromagnetic radiation inside the dust, having half wavelength lambda over 2 equal d. Now, this is an assertion on my part. You may find another way of conserving that. But what I've argued here is that you're going to produce a standing wave inside the dust. Now the Planck energy in that standing radiation is shown here. H is Planck's constant, C is the velocity, Y, N is the refractive index. And you get an expression like this, hc over 2nd. And what reason for the refractive index is to correct for the slower velocity of light in the solid state. Now, once the electromagnetic confinement is depleted in creating the standing wave photon, there's no longer any electromagnetic confinement, and the standing wave photon then escapes the dust as a redshifted photon with wavelength 2nd, and it heads to the Earth. In this arrangement, what is a redshift? What is a valid and invalid redshift? Well, here you see a plot of QED redshift on the ordinate, or Z sub D, as you recall. This is the cosmic radius, D over 2 in microns. And on this ordinate is the galaxy velocity ratio, which is V over C. And V over C is shown here in blue, and you can see, depending on the diameter, the radius, you can get anything, you get very high values here. You can approach the speed of light. The other two curves, this yellow and white curve, are the redshift, Z sub D, as a function of Lyman alpha or H alpha. The two different lines. And M31 was the one I just mentioned to you, is shown here. It's very close to zero on the redshift. Now, to take the point a little further, I picked a point here at 0.1 micron radius, 0.2 micron diameter, and I computed Z for the Lyman alpha, as you can see here. For D of 200, and I took N here 1.5, And the wavelength of the Lyman Alpha is 121.7 nanometers. And what you get is that you get a very high redshift of 4, and the velocity is 0.92c, almost the speed of light. And I showed that with the dotted white dot that you see here. So then the question is that valid? Well, if you're looking out at a star and you happen to be looking at Lyman alphas and it's absorbed by a dust particle, and if that's what you're looking at, then you're going to conclude that the galaxy is moving almost at the speed of light away from you, when in fact it's not moving at all, it's all in dust. So the sensitivity of the dust to redshift is very high. And from this you can make an argument of what would be a valid redshift. If the redshift of the Lyman alpha happens to be equal to the redshift of the H alpha, there's no cosmic dust. This is perfect reflection from the surface, and you have valid redshift. So you can see if it's cosmic dust, you're going to get a different value. For any given diameter or radius, the redshifts are different. They are not the same. So this is a way of checking to see if your results are valid. The problem is that the redshift is usually only measured for one line. You need at least two lines, right? But they only measure for one line. And if there's more than one line, an average is computed, even if they're not the same. If they're not the same, they can't be valid. The lines cannot be valid. And if you take an average, you're just further off. So basically, this is the status of astronomy today. Now, simple QED. Summarizing, simple QED converts heat Q into EM radiation because quantum mechanics precludes conservation by temperature. Basically, all that's saying is heat added to a nanoparticle, and here the caveat is that without heat capacity, you're going to produce electromagnetic radiation. Now, I show here a single photon going to interact with the dust particle. I'm doing this on purpose because I want to extend this to a continuous wave laser shortly. Now, if you add heat to this single photon of heat, it all goes to the surface, right? Because of the high surface-to-volume ratio. Quantum mechanics says there's no temperature change. And you conserve this by creating a standing wave in here, lambda over 2 equal to the diameter of the nanoparticle. And once you use up all the energy on the surface to create the standing wave, there's no longer any confinement, and the radiation comes off and goes to Earth. Now, in contrast, in the laboratory, we use continuous wave lasers, and many nanotechnology experiments are based on this. They don't have single photons, they have a continuous wave laser. So you have a lot of energy coming in here. And the difference is that when it comes in, it will be absorbed at a higher energy level. The standing wave in this nanoparticle will be in the extreme ultraviolet. And what happens in that state, the energy will fluoresce out to lower states, like the ultraviolet state of a molecule that happens to be inside the nanoparticle. Reactive oxygen species, these are commonly associated with medical cancer. And then we have plasmons. And so many of these can be produced after. But you have to absorb the energy into the EUV. And most of the time, plasmons are assumed to dissipate, but that's not quite true, as you can see. The equations are very simple. The frequency of the radiation is C over N divided by lambda. Lambda over 2 is D. E is equal to HF. And N can be greater than 1. If you have a continuous wave laser, you can put a lot of energy, produce a lot of a large number of photons having energy E. So this is the basic general idea from single photon illumination to continuous wave irradiation. The Bola cluster. Now, this is thought to provide the best evidence for the nature of dark matter. And here you see the Bola cluster, a NASA Chandra picture. Here, you see a bullet forming here on one side. These are collision of two galaxies. And this is one moving to the right. This is one moving to the left. Another version of that is shown here. The X-ray is in pink. It's superposed over a visible light image of the galaxy. You see the galaxies all around. And the matter distribution calculated from gravitational lensing is shown in blue. So on either side of this gas, this X-ray region, you have dark matter. This is where the galaxies would have been. Now, the theory for gravitational lensing, what you see of an observer, you have a lens. This could be a star or a galaxy itself. And then your source is way out here. This is the source point. And the distance from the observer to the lens is d sub l. And from the observer to the source is d sub s. And the difference is dl sub s. Now, when you do the lensing, what you see, if you get a very strong interaction, you'll see the curved arcs. Here you see one which is fairly clear, and here's one that I use, and I find a radius to it, theta sub e, which you can see here. So you can actually scale these off. And theta e is called the Einstein radius. It's given by this equation, and you can see the mass is shown inside theta sub e depends on these distances. And that tells you to solve for the mass, you're going to need these distances. And to get those distances, unfortunately, you've got to go to redshift. You have to somehow measure those distances, and you have the same problem we had before. The redshifts are going to be overstated. So, but if you know these, and you know some of these dimensions, you can compute the Hubble constant. H0 Z, the redshift, times C over D. But you need to know Z and D. Okay. Errors. The gravitational lensing allows Hubble's constant by knowing its redshift and hence its recession velocity. It's usually in the range of 50 to 90 kilometers per second per megaparsec. And currently the approach is very complicated. You have a distance spider, parallax, cluster fitting, Cefanvero. You have to look at type 1 supernova. And this is the subject of accumulation of errors. And in this mess, or difficulty, maybe a better way of putting it, is that the one-step gravitational lens is desirable. So people are really moving away from this complicated procedure to gravitational lenses. But the problem, and there's always a problem, is the gravitational lensing also relies on best redshift and measuring D sub S, and this can lead to overstating the dark matter. Now, here's a cartoon of light bending around a star. and nanoparticles. White comes in, and I show it in yellow here. It curves around. It's exaggerated this to make the point. And in the region here, you have nanoparticles. Where do they come from? Well, they're part of the star. So they'll be present here whether you like it or not. They're there. And if you add heat to these nanoparticles, you're going to produce, and there's heat available in the star, you're going to produce simple QED radiation, which is going to be spherical. I show just a one line here, but each of these nanoparticles will be emitting a spherical array of energy. And some of that will head to Earth, and that can be interpreted as redshift when it has nothing to do with it. How about discussions? I don't have much time for the radio redshift, accelerating universe expansion, dark matter, ghost galaxy, wave particle duality, and again going back to the Bullock cluster. Radio redshift. The Wisconsin field effect couples the spin temperature TS of the 21 centimeter line of neutral hydrogen at 1420 megahertz to the kinetic temperature T sub K. But the problem is the Planck law invalidates the WF effect, as the kinetic temperature T sub K cannot fluctuate by quantum mechanics. If you really have a neutral hydrogen atom floating in space, you're not going to see any temperatures. And then, so what this means is a 21 centimeter line can only have a non-thermal origin. And therefore, radio redshift that's being measured, I don't know what is being measured, but it can't be the atom temperature. So cosmology must rely on optical redshift. How I'd like to leave this, there may be discussions on this later, but basically, I think there's... radio astronomy is problematic, as I view it. How about accelerated expansion? Well, in 2001, supernova was found brighter than they should have been, and this implied to the astronomers that of accelerated universe expansion. Here I show an observer in O. He's looking at the brightness of this star, the supernova. And he estimates that this is the Z sub V based on brightness. When he goes to redshift and does the same experiment, he concludes the supernova is further away, as I show it here in gray versus white here. And what this means is that redshift ZD is greater than zero, and it tells you that the supernova appears further away, right? ZV plus ZD. But brighter because the supernova is actually a ZV. So what this all means is that an accelerating universe is not real, but rather an illusion caused by cosmic dust. Dark matter. In 1970, spiral galaxy M31 found to have a flat velocity curve with a decreasing nitrogen 2 line intensity. Here I show a plan view of that. It's turning, the galaxy is turning counterclockwise, and on edge view, if you look in here, the velocity from Newtonian mechanics is given here. And the problem is, when you measure the redshift to determine the velocities, what you get is a flat curve, a larger ordinate, actually dwarfing this Newtonian mechanics curve, so then it's flat. And go here and take another look at that. Here's the nucleus of the universe, of the galaxy, and the coordinate system. X is pointing to the Earth down here, and Y is orthogonal to that. And these angles, theta, I show 3 points here. These are really cosmic dust particles located in the galaxy. And so the nitrogen 2 radiation is spherical, goes outward until it's absorbed. And once it's absorbed, it can come be re-emitted back to Earth, as you see here. And under those conditions, the amplitude here will be a zero cosine theta. So it will, the intensity will increase with the, will decrease with, as you go out radially with the angle theta. So the velocity is a constant because 2nd is a constant, and lambda is the nitrogen 2 line. So you get a flat curve because no matter where you look, if the dust is the same diameter, it's going to produce the same velocity. And the line intensity then is given by A0 cosine theta. And what this implies is that there's a decreasing intensity as they observed in 1970. And so the flat curve is caused by dust, not dark matter. Line intensity, and I go into this in a little detail, because the decrease in intensity of the nitrogen 2 line, since the energy of the galaxy photon is absorbed in the nanoparticle surface, Fermat's principle requires the emission to occur in minimum time. So what this means is the energy will be emitted across the minimum dimension between nanoparticle surfaces. For spherical nanoparticles, in the direction of the incoming line. And for plate-like nanoparticles, normal to the plate surface. Here I show another picture. This is a flat plate nanoparticle. This is the emission, the nitrogen 2 line. And the intensity is A0 cosine theta. And if it's turned a little bit, it will be re-emitted in the direction of the minimum direction again, which is in the direction beta, as you see here. So there's a correction to the line intensity depending on the shape of the particle. The ghost galaxy. This is called DF2, and it was recently discovered and caused quite an alarm because they could not find any dark matter. Here you can see a picture of it. It's transparent, and you can see right through it. These are stars in the background, so you're looking. There's no dust at all here. The question you have is, there's no dark matter, but it's transparent. Can you explain that? Well, based on what I just told you, the question is, there's no dark matter because there's no cosmic dust. And what about wave particle duality? Simple QED is the mechanism by which a photon as a particle becomes a wave depending on the interaction with the size of matter. It's not just the interaction with matter, but it depends on how the size of the matter itself. Here you see a galaxy photon coming in, E equals nu. It's shown as a particle, and this is an outer space. Okay. It encounters a nanoparticle. It produces a wave inside, and we've gone through that. And then when it's re-emitted, you would think it would come out as a wave, but no, it doesn't. It can't. It has to come out as a particle because the system is in a vacuum. And the redshift is given here. So basically, in a vacuum, a photon is a particle, not a wave. In matter, a photon is a wave, not a particle, but the wave properties depend on the size of the matter. A little different than you find in the textbooks. Bohr cluster, again, you see the picture. X-ray image pink. Visible image stars. Dark matter from lensing in blue. Here's the blue. And these are in colliding galaxies. Now, what I've shown here, I've shown the X-rays to emit heat outward. which it goes in, when it goes into the adjacent galaxies, as you see here, or here, and here, then you have nanoparticles or small particles. You'll produce redshift and conclude that that's causing a change in dark matter, when in fact it isn't. So the X-ray heating of the nanoparticles in galaxies overstates the redshift. So the dark matter that you're computing, I showed you that equation earlier, will be overstated. Conclusion, because of cosmicness, perhaps cosmology may return to Einstein's once upon a time, again, once upon a time, static universe. Well, that's all I have. This is my email in how to say age, take a look at it. Thank you very much.